And Anita's over in Studio B with Phil Collins. Hello, Anita.
Hello, Joe. How you doing?
We sound fine.
Like we're cities apart. We're only a few rooms apart. We're doing this because, Joe, we couldn't stand to be in the same room as you.
That's cute.
Just kidding. I'm here with Phil Collins.
And
Phil's in town with his band Genesis to do three nights at the Spectrum. That's pretty good.
Sacre bleu, yes. We keep adding a night every year we come here.
Well, that's good. Philly's been very, very good to you.
It certainly has. It's one of those towns, in fact, there's about, you can count on one hand, the towns that have been really, really kind to us. And Philadelphia is definitely the top of the list. We love to come here. We're the town theatre. We remember those shows.
Oh, yeah. That'd be nice if you could play in small clubs now.
Well, we're trying now. We did the Roxy in Los Angeles last year when we played the big gig and the small gig.
Right.
We did the Park West in Chicago as well as the Rosemont Arena. Two nights, and then in New York, after we finish in Philly, we're going to play the Savoy before we play Nassau and Meadowlands.
Oh, so you are doing?
We are doing. Yeah. We're trying to slip in the odd club and small, very small sort of theater club.
Keeps it fresh, keeps it different perspective each night.
I mean, we must want to do it because it's occupied nights off, and we sort of said, "There's a night off here. Let's put a gig in," you know. So.
Or maybe you don't know what else to do.
No, well, we got plenty of things to do. Believe me.
Well, I looked up Genesis in the dictionary last night to find out what it meant, so I could further understand some of the things.
It meant three-piece group.
No, it means the coming into being of anything. Did you know? I'm sure you knew that.
Well, yeah.
So we have this new album now, which is sort of a departure.
Yeah.
It's more like you, I think, than it is like the other guys. Isn't this more of you than ever?
I think it's more. Well, I know that the album is the first truly democratic album we've done since maybe The Lamb, and pre-Lamb days. We were very, very democratic. We just sit in a room with not much material, and just sort of throw an idea in the middle of the room and people pick it up and play it. But I mean, we actually toyed with the idea the other day of changing our name, of you know, just all the connotations that go with being. You know, A, called Genesis,
right?
And B, this sort of very unadventurous attitude that some people have of not wanting you to change. You know.
Yes, it's been a problem for you. You were mentioning to me before.
Not so much in the States, but in Europe, especially in some parts of Europe, it's just people generally go on automatic pilot. You know, they don't like to have change. They like to put you in a pocket, in an area, and say, well, you do that kind of thing, and Earth, Wind, and Fire do that kind of thing, and the more weird stuff Peter takes with him and does on his albums. But in fact, you know, we all throw everything up in the air and see how it lands, and we're desperately not. You know, not desperate, that's the wrong word, but I mean, I personally have got a little vendetta going on to try and get people to think about us as being something that they think we're not.
I see.
Is, you know, just one of the reasons why we use the horns on the album.
It makes you wonder if you're ever going to get to the point where people are going to accept you for what you do. It's just like probably in the beginning when you probably started, and people were probably thinking, well, what's this? And now they're doing it all over again. I don't know why they don't just sit back.
Yeah,
let you do, because if they're not into the change, they're not really.
Well, they're not
into
really
it
into.
At all.
They're not. Yeah, exactly. If they don't like, you know, the sort of. I mean, from my point of view, I'm trying to get as much black into the music as possible.
Right.
Now, if they don't like that, then they don't really like what I like about the band. You see, so therefore they're liking the band for my point.
So it's not
reasons.
Even the same band that we're talking about.
Not really. No.
Right. Because the old Genesis was. I have to be honest. I didn't understand a thing you guys were saying. I mean, I really didn't. I had no idea what you were talking about.
I've got to be careful, because I mean, I don't want to decry and just sort of any of the old stuff, you see.
Right,
because, I mean, at the time, and I mean, we still go back to things like from Selling by the Pound on stage and play them, and they're like a period piece, you know, like you go back and you sing the lyrics that you wrote then as opposed to the lyrics you're writing now. But maybe with Peter, we were all growing up, you know. It was very wordy. There was, you know, 3,000 words a minute, and it was words that you wouldn't necessarily find in normal rock songs.
Right.
And it baffled some people, and it entranced others.
That's true.
But I think as you get better at playing your instrument, better at writing songs, you usually end up, you know, honing it down to something that is just as complex if you look at it.
And as a songwriter, maybe for yourself, it's probably more revealing now, things about yourself, and you probably gain more confidence.
Right.
That you could write about personal things.
On my album was a total, you know, personal sort of, you know, skin peeling off.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the band album, although a lot of people have said because of the change in its scale, you know, it's sort of been honed down to sort of very simple aspects of the group. It isn't. It's just me. I've become more of a third person in the group rather than before, when I didn't actually have the time or energy or inclination to write, sit down and write and finish a song. The thing that I went through that produced my album made me sit down and actually want to do it. And now, I mean, the Abacab album is, as I said before, you know, is probably the first democratic album we've had for years. We produced it ourselves. We all knew what we wanted to do. And it was really, it's one of those things where you sit with someone and they've been thinking of something, changing something, but never saying anything about it. They just want a second opinion. And then someone will come along and say, listen, you know, why don't we do that? And they say, ah, no, I've been thinking that for a long time.
I was afraid to say it.
Right.
Right.
So therefore you end up with things that are very, you know, you take all the trimmings off. And as I say, it's just as complicated. People think that because it's just like drums, bass and guitar, it's less complicated than something that's got huge, you know.
Oh, wait till next year. They'll be wanting to hear this stuff and you'll be trying to play new stuff. So yeah. I think that people will come around. I certainly love this album. This is my favorite one. I like you guys now. And why don't we play something from the LP? Why don't we play the title track? Then we'll come back. You can tell us what it means and how you got together with Earth, Wind & Fire. 93.3 WMMR. Let's hear the title track, Abacab. 93.3 WMMR. I'm Anita, sitting here with Phil Collins from Genesis. They're in town for three nights, and it's a hard ticket to get. You actually really sold out three nights, just about.
Yeah.
Just about. I think you can probably still get a ticket and you can sit.
I know, I've got 40,000 tickets in the back of the car.
Oh, you do? For your friends and your close relations, right? We were discussing how Abacab became a word, and a lot of people had some pretty stupid ideas as to what it meant. Probably a lot of you out there had some ideas, but Phil's going to clear it up for us.
Right. Yes, there were three sections to the song, and because the song was born out of a jam, really, we had to refer to the sections by name or by numbers. And so originally they were by name, and the first part was a thing which we called Booker T and the MGs, right? Because of the sort of da-da-da-da-da-da-da, sound like an old Booker T track. Then there was B, which was a bit which we thought sounded like the Stones, and C, which was a bit that sounded a bit like the Easy Beats, Friday On My Mind, kind of umgat, 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 umgat. So we kept toying around with the sort of format of the song, and by the time the end of the day came, because we were rehearsing for about 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, and it changed, you know, over a period of 2 weeks, it changed format quite regularly, and the only way to remember it from day to day was by calling it a word. You know, that is to say the order of which the events went.
And Each section was assigned a sound, and then it was A
was the
B.
Verse, B was the chorus, and C was the middle bit. And so it became, you know, it was cababa, abacab, a cab, it went through all kinds of stuff.
Good choice. So most of your influences, maybe if people understood what you listened to as you were growing up and making your own music, they would understand that sooner or later after you went through one phase of the band that you would revert back to some of that funky stuff.
I think us, the Police and us,
yes.
I think are keeping, there's a certain 60s spirit alive. That is to say modern, you know, I'm not saying we're going to revive songs, literally songs.
The sound, the feeling.
But the method of recording.
And the method of recording.
The method of recording, I think, has yet to be bettered. I mean, you can get records that sound good, but you can never get records nowadays that have the sound and spirit as the Motown stuff, the Beatles stuff, early Stone stuff that were done. And I could go into this. I mean, just because they're on 4-track, you have to make decisions there and then. You can't say, okay, well, I'll wait and get 48 tracks and then choose the best.
Right.
You've got to make the decisions. And then that orgasmic moment when you put the music down and the engineer's got the good sound,
it all happens.
You then mix it.
Right.
And then you do, any overdubs you do, got to fit in with the original vibe. And I'm gonna put this into practice, hopefully, on my next record. I mean, try and keep that attitude in mind. I mean, I tried to do it on my last record, on my album, because I did a lot of it at home under those circumstances. And I actually kept the stuff that I did at home. But, just melody, you know, we're just sort of, it's basically sort of 60s in a way. It had melody and a bit of integrity, I guess.
So instead of the new Genesis, we could probably refer to this as the old Genesis, the same Genesis.
I guess
Genesis.
So, yeah. Yes. I mean, we all grew up with the same influences.
Right. Where did you run across Earth, Wind & Fire? You certainly didn't come from the same neighborhood.
That's true. Well, when I came to do my record, I wanted I mean, most of the people who played on my record were friends.
Stephen Bishop.
Bishop I met through Clapton. Clapton's a neighbour of mine. Right. I met Bishop, and I was a big, big fan of his, and he'd never heard of Genesis at all. And when I invited him, I played on his last record with Clapton and Gary Brooker, and he said, well, you know, I'd like to, you know, I said, can you come and sing on my record? And he said, yeah, you know, because I was going to LA to do it. And he was expecting a heavy rock tune, you know, and then it came up, This Must Be Love came up, and he thought it was a very pretty tune, he really enjoyed it. And we've since become friends. But Earth, Wind & Fire, I'd never met. I mean, I've been a big admirer of theirs, and they're the best horn section
yes,
in the world.
They're the best.
And I said to our West Coast Atlantic man, who now works for Geffen, but was then with Atlantic, I said, listen, you want to do me a favour? See if you can get Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, I'll stick your neck out of it. And so he rang up George, someone who is Maurice White's sort of personal assistant,
mm-hmm.
and said, Phil wants to use the horns, and I sent some demos over that I'd done at home, and they liked them. And the first time we met was in a hotel room. They came down to the studio, because I was doing some overdubbing, because Daryl played on the album, Daryl Sturman, mm-hmm. he lived in Los Angeles, Alfonso played a bit, he lived in Los Angeles, Steve Bishop lived in Los Angeles, my girlfriend was living in Los Angeles.
So you were outnumbered.
Right, so I decided to go over there. So they came into the studio, the four horn players, and Tom 84, who's their arranger, and they got one cassette with my tunes, without the horns, right, and one cassette which he was going to record what I was going to play him, plus my da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- really, they were impressed with the way, you know, the way the music merged. You know, the English music, English chords, with what I was taking as being very typical Earth, Wind & Fire stuff. You know, I mean, like their brass section is very, you know, is one of the things.
Yeah.
You know? And the two together, they really loved. And so I said, well, listen, we're going to do a Genesis album when we get back. If I can possibly persuade the other guys, I think it would be good for us, because what I was talking about before, taking people off automatic pilot.
Right.
That we're not what they think we are. Let's jolt them a bit.
Yeah, you
so,
did.
I asked Tony and Mike, and we said, well, let's see what music comes up, because we hadn't written any music. And a couple of things did come up. One was No Reply, and the other one was a tune which isn't on the album, but it's going to be a single. We only did two tunes. Me and Mike flew out to Los Angeles to do it. And I went to see him last night in Madison Square Garden. I flew back.
Yeah, they were just here.
Right. Well, we had a night off, and I couldn't resist seeing the show.
Yeah, they're the best. They're great. Did you like it?
Oh,
I wish you were up there with the horns.
It is the best show. I mean, I don't see that many rock shows. I mean, I haven't seen the Stones yet, which I'd like to do. But, I mean, they were the best show I have ever seen. I mean, I'm biased, obviously, but they do it. You know, when they get into a groove, there's no one that can stop them. And it was a fantastic show. I got to meet Maurice White, who I'd never met, Freddie White. And these guys, they're admirers. I mean, you always think the grass is greener on the other side, right?
Right, sure.
And yeah, I'm saying, I got to Freddie White, their drummer, and say, Phil, I'm so pleased to meet you. He says, Phil, really dig your shit, man. Right? I mean, and B-Lord, who's their new guy that's writing all the songs for him now, you know, he goes back to the hotel and he plays Trick of the Tail to unwind, you know.
You never know. You can't tell.
It's amazing.
Which is why I think it should merge. I think it's about time.
I think it's great.
Especially if they could all sound like No Reply at all. Let's hear that from Avacab right now, 93.3 WMMR. .3 WMMR. You like it too, huh?
Oh yeah.
I thought it was. It's my favorite fast one. But anyway. So that's the Earth, Wind & Fire story. I'm glad we finally got it worked out. I didn't know. I thought you guys went a little crazy too when I saw this new record. Why don't you put your pictures on the albums?
Well, we did on the inside sleeve this time.
Yeah,
that's the first time ever.
Why?
We've always had this idea that we look the same as everybody else, and so therefore, you know, you try and put out an image on an album.
But the girls want to see.
Well, the girls have to buy the album and open it up this time.
Okay. What are you going to do Thanksgiving? Don't you guys have a Thanksgiving thing?
We don't have we try to find a song that we could sing,
mm-hmm.
like get the audience to sing along to, like, but, you know, in Christmas it's different. Everyone's
yeah.
Different. But there doesn't appear to be a Thanksgiving song.
I don't know any turkey songs. Yeah. Turkey in the Straw.
Turkey in the Straw, I don't know.
I'll have to teach that one.
Maybe I'm learning to play trumpet.
Okay.
So maybe I'll try and find a tune on the trumpet.
All right. Okay, I know that you have a million things that you have to do, and we also want to encourage all of our listeners out there, if you'd like to speak with Phil Collins on the phone, we're not going to let you do it in person.
I'm going to go around everybody's house.
Yeah, everybody's going to go door to door and see what, if he can get a Thanksgiving. I know that my mother would invite you to Thanksgiving, but you'd have to bring all your friends.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, we have to get in my favorite record, too. We have to get in my favorite cut on the album, which is Like It or Not. Which is a very romantic song.
It is. It's
and it's a sad song.
It's a sad song. Yeah. Michael wrote it. He's not sad usually, but he writes nice.
You're usually the sad one.
Well, I have moments of sadness.
Okay. Well,
but I'm coming out of it all right.
You're doing a fine job. You really are. We're going to go back to Joe in the other studio, and he's going to tell you how you can call up and speak with Phil Collins. And then, Joe, will you play that favorite song for me?
Sure. You bet.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Anita.